nowadays, the feel of the door handle when you walk in the space, what the mat feels like when you walk on it, the instant smell that you hear, the noises if it's curated music that's being played, the beauty hall that opens out before you, the vistas to the escalator, the natural wayfinding. I like to think of it as like the customer is being, customers today are so well informed, they really are, and ever more demanding as well. So we've got to tick all of those boxes, not only for our clients, but also for the customers. And if we give them pleasure throughout that entire journey, then we are doing our job properly.
That's Simon Mitchell, co-founder of the architectural studio Sybarite, speaking about luxury retail design. Welcome to the WJSN Create Tomorrow podcast. My name is Bethan Ryder, Director of Editorial at WJSN, and I'm your host for this episode. At WJSN, we've seen steady growth in physical retail. We're going back to the shops, but shops have to do a lot more to compete with e-commerce nowadays. So today we'll look at how luxury brands and how luxury retail design is evolving to drive more business and increase shopping IRL, that's in real life. So joining me to discuss this topic is Laura Saunter, a senior strategist on Insight, who is our retail and luxury expert at WJSN. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Bethan. Thanks for having me.
I'm also excited to have with us another expert in this realm, and that's Simon Mitchell, co-founder of architectural studio Sybarite, which works across retail, hospitality, product and branding, and is based in West London, but has created projects across the globe for brands including Marni, Ferrari, Joseph, and most recently, luxury Chinese department store SKP. Hi, Simon.
Hi, Bethan. It's a pleasure to be here with you on this podcast.
Thanks for joining us. So this topic is really interesting, I think, which is why we've come together, because clearly during the pandemic, the shift to online shopping was a really major deal, right? So IRL retail has to offer so much more now and in the future to keep consumers returning, I think. So I wanted to come to you first, Simon, because I know you've just completed this sort of major project in Chengdu for the SKP brand. And it's a department store, but it's a little bit of an understatement, right? Can you just tell us a little bit about this project?
Absolutely. It's a wonderful project. It's the sheer scale of it and its kind of biophilic element is impressive. Ultimately, it is the world's first subterranean retail park. We're giving a gift back to the city of Chengdu, a huge 140,000 square meter public park. And it's part of the China's government mandate for sustainable construction by 2060. And we've been part of that. We're one of the test case projects for that experiment.
Obviously, there are quite a lot of retail parks around the world. This is by scale. It sounds like it sort of differs in that way. What else is different? You talked about the biophilia. Are there world firsts there as well in terms of what you've integrated here?
Yeah, so not only the sustainable construction code, you know, everything is sourced within a 500 kilometer range of the site, which is a world's first, but also there's never been a luxury sunken retail park ever being built on this planet before. So that's a world first. We have the longest Eat Street on the planet. It's a new blueprint as well, for so you are never further than 45 seconds to 1 minute from an outside space. So even though it is all subterranean, we've carved out all of the openings within this park. So you descend in from being dropped off by the road, all you see is this beautifully landscaped public park. You never have any sort of preconceptions of the sheer scale that is beneath your feet, but everything is on a human scale. And we do that kind of gradual progression of the coding, human-centric. So you get dropped off, you pass into the park, you can use the park, you don't even have to touch any of the retail or the F&B, and then you descend through these external escalators with kinetic baffles that shimmer as you drop down into this park, and then the whole park opens out before you. And it's a very impressive sort of experience just in the essence of walking around the park, let alone being able to use the retail offer and the F&B, the hospitality.
Great. It sounds like it's really bringing people there for many reasons. It's not simply shopping, which is very interesting indeed.
Community is at the heart of the SKP Chengdu project, most definitely.
Yeah. I want to come to you next, Laura. Laura Saunter, our head of retail at WGSN. I know that you sort of recently been looking at luxury retail in one of your forecasts and that importance of engaging consumers again, and specifically luxury consumers. And have you also noticed this kind of gravitation towards scale? Because I know that the biophilia obviously is one thing, but what are people doing to really bring people back?
I think people have rediscovered their love for shopping IRL. And with that, we're seeing tons and tons and tons of exciting opportunities around physical retail, especially in the luxury space. And I think one of the main shifts that we saw in the kind of immediate post-pandemic landscape was this sort of knee-jerk reaction to retailers kind of downsizing their stores or right-sizing. So kind of focusing on closing underperforming stores or, you know, stores that had too much square footage and really just concentrating on optimizing the space that they already had. So that's where we had lots of store closures coming through, you know, lots of micro formats, small formats, people kind of just concentrating on revamping their existing space. But now that's kind of been flipped on its head, and we've got this real return to the flagship store with this rise again of like bigger and better space and these really high-end, experience-led, essentially sort of supersized retail environments that really allow brands and retailers, especially in the luxury sector, to kind of immerse the customer in their vision. So I think if you're thinking about, you know, product discovery and brand immersion, where it's really exciting is this sort of multifaceted, multi-typology approach where you've got this entire brand universe, as I said, under one roof. So a really nice example, apart from, you know, Simon's incredible SKP example, is if you look at what Dior has done in Paris with their new flagship, which opened last year. So they essentially kind of knocked six buildings into one, and they opened this mega, mega complex, which has got like an art gallery in it. There's a restaurant, there's a spa, there's a cafe, there's gardens, there's a museum, there's like an apartment where you can stay the night with a personal chef, that kind of thing. So, you know, these kind of mega projects, Tiffany & Co. have just done one in New York. It really sort of signals this new era of like flagship retailing at a time when shoppers are eagerly returning to stores. And I think it's really, really exciting.
It's really interesting what you said there about a sense of discovery. Simon, you've got lots of experience in designing retail. What kind of devices are you using? Because I like the way you were just describing how you kind of discover the park and your view that people get. But what are some of your design devices there? What kind of ways have you thought about that when you've been designing?
Absolutely. I mean, creating a sense of discovery is the, you know, it's almost like one of our 10 commandments of retail design. It's intrinsic. It's part of the process. It's what the end customer craves. It's that hope of newness that will be imparted by their visit. It's the promise, you know, and dare I say the, you know, delivery time and time again of that newness is what brings the customers back time and time again. Yeah, retail at the end of the day is theatre, and it's those moments before arrival, that anticipation, that has a huge impact and relevance, yeah, which is one of the reasons why we spend so much time on facades and piazzas and subliminal design coding. So that I use the analogy of an onion, and I think for a customer you should continually peel back layers and layers and layers each time you return, and you understand more and more about the reasons and the depth behind the retail architecture that we put into this, and that should be tailored individually for each and every brand that we work for. So, you know, sense of discovery is also about the appetite for bravery. Our work in China has allowed us to flex our design and architectural muscles in this regard, you know, creating episodic kind of concepts like SKPS I talked about earlier is like the alter ego of SKP, where we are trying to attract a younger audience, and 65% of the area within SKPS is dedicated to experience rather than product. And we're creating whole new, slightly bonkers narratives. You know, we're asking our customers, what's it like to live and shop on Mars? And we're asking all of the brands that are within the SKPS stores to come on board with that narrative as well. So it's a whole crescendo of a journey of life on Mars, which is, when we opened this store in 2019, just unfortunately, just before the pandemic, it was just like, this is just totally, totally, amazingly new. And it still is one of the most talked about concepts in modern retail times. So we are, not only are we architects, we're interior designers, we're product designers, we're art curators, we are storytellers, we are musicians, we are touching all of the senses with everything that we do. And I think that's what, you know, if you want to be a good retail designer, this is what you have to achieve with your customer, because customers today are so well informed. They really are, and ever more demanding as well. So we've got to tick all of those boxes, not only for our clients, but also for the customers. And if we give them pleasure throughout that entire journey, then we are doing our job properly.
Yeah, I mean, I echo a lot of what Simon said around, you know, people really valuing the idea of the experience over the concept of owning something physical. That's been bubbling under for a number of years. You know, that's not really anything new, but I think what is kind of shaping the new luxury retail landscape is this idea of people wanting a really kind of outstanding, unique, incredible, meaningful experience, whether that's an immersive concept store, whether it's an art installation that takes your breath away, some kind of extraordinary journey that, you know, blurs the line between retail and theater, as Simon said. You know, we all know shoppers have so much choice. They can take their wallet anywhere. They can shop across platforms anywhere, at any time, anyhow. So how you can truly get them to engage with you is by embracing this concept of almost shifting away from selling and instead focusing on creating an outstanding experience. And I think in the sort of top 1% luxury, true luxury sector, the idea of loyalty is changing a lot. You know, the loyalty space is very crowded. The average US consumer belongs to 17 loyalty programs now. So for those top tier clients, I think the knock-on effect on luxury retail and the luxury sector is, you know, you used to be serviced within the retail space itself if you were a top VIC, a very important consumer. And to an extent, they still are. But those kind of services are now turning into sort of experiences to really court that very important customer. And we're seeing like some new retail strategies and services that really kind of underscore exclusivity. So, you know, taking your clients to Royal Ascot, taking your private clients on trips, Gucci and Chanel opening sort of invite-only private salons. It's this kind of intimate private experiences for that top 0.1% that really kind of immerse them in the brand. I think what Brunello Cucinelli does with his Casa Cucinelli, which is essentially he invites them into his home and he cooks for them and, you know, offers them sort of exclusive art exhibitions and things like that. Ultimately, all it's about is offering an antidote to kind of mass consumerism and making the customer feel like you're not focused on trying to sell them products. I think no one, especially the younger generation these days, wants to feel like they're being sold to. So it's really about eliciting emotion and driving loyalty around how you make people feel.
Simon, let's come back to you again. So what kind of devices have you or experiences have you created?
I think there are so many channels in which you can access brands and their storytelling, and they all have to be very much joined up. But what I also like to sort of preach, especially to my designers here in the studio, is this kind of back to the future approach. If you think of a department store from 200 years ago, you think of Le Bon Marché in Paris, or Harrods here in London, or let's say Saks Fifth Avenue in New York. They were embassies. They were places of grandeur, of curation. They were every single thing that you touched or looked at, every vista, every smell, scent, fabrics, haberdashery departments, you know, tailoring, millinery. They were incredible curated experiences, and every detail mattered. So I take the same, you know, so this back to the future approach. I think everything is very cyclical, and I think nowadays the feel of the door handle when you walk in the space, what the mat feels like when you walk on it, the instant smell that you hear, the noises if it's curated music that's being played, the beauty hall that opens out before you, the vistas to the escalator, the natural wayfinding, what the escalator screens look like, what the sight lines are like. Are the brands curated and organized in an elegant way under a single house style? You know, what does the lift button look like? What does the lift interior, you know, all of these things need to be curated. So that, what I like to think of it as, like, the customer is being, it's like they're on a sense of their own discovery, and it's like everything is special and curated especially for them on their journey. So even if they're just meeting a friend for a coffee within what I like to also talk about is blended retail hospitality and retail offering, all of these things need to be orchestrated intentionally through the retail design.
You're listening to Create Tomorrow. I'm your host, Bethan Ryder. Today, we're discussing luxury retail design. I'm joined by Simon Mitchell, co-founder of the architectural studio Sybarite, and WGSN senior strategist Laura Saunter. Laura, you, I know, have written about this and this kind of like cultural element part of retail. What have you been seeing there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, culture's always kind of been at the heart of brand building, especially for luxury retailers. But it really is becoming much, much more of a sort of engagement strategy, a very important engagement strategy these days, I think, especially for connecting with Gen Z. Gen Z, they love culture, they love community. And a lot of retailers are kind of jumping on this idea of aligning with culture to really stand out as a luxury destination for younger shoppers. I think if you look at what Flannels is doing, they're obviously the British luxury multi-brand retailer. They have kind of really transformed their flagship on Oxford Street to become this space for sort of cultural programming. So they've got store takeovers from various kind of Gen Z icons and creatives. They've got workshops and discussions with various disruptors across the fashion and the beauty space. So they're really using this idea and harnessing this idea of culture to connect with the younger consumer. Also in Italy, there's a sneaker brand, Golden Goose. They're a premium sneaker brand, they're luxury. They're actually opening their own kind of cultural hub in Venice to align with next year's Biennale. And it's going to include things like a craftsmanship school, an art school. There's going to be a product development hub, kind of bringing people behind the scenes of how they develop the products and a space for exhibitions and events. So I think this idea of sort of aligning with culture and kind of positioning yourself as synonymous with innovation and creativity is really, really important in the future and sort of helping your store and your brand to really stand out in a crowded space.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. I think also it's important to not do any kind of too much cultural appropriation with retail design. I think culture is super important, but if you can blend it in a new way and represent it back to the local audience, I think then it becomes super, super clever. And it's something that we've been doing for many years. I've been doing retail design for nearly 30 years now, and we were doing this with the Marni stores back in the early 2002, where yes, we've got a signature style for our monobrand client, which is highly recognizable with the sinuous stainless steel rails. But in each and every store, it was never a cookie cutter approach. So the London Sloane Street store would echo the St. George flag of England, the London red bus, the red telephone box. Also, not many people will know this, subliminally echoing the dinosaur skeleton in the Natural History Museum. Whereas the stores in Tokyo could be referencing the Japanese flag, they could be more Zen temple-like, whereas in Miami, it's going to be more Art Deco and playful. In New York, we literally force the customer to look up as if they were in, you know, looking up at skyscrapers. So it's all of these little playful messages that you can represent the culture in a new way, which I think customers really appreciate.
I love that. And I also love how a lot of luxury store design is becoming more playful. And I think it's not just about targeting the Gen Z shopper. It's just about this shift towards kind of emotion-led shopping in general and kind of wanting to spread joy and make people feel happy and release dopamine. And just in a post-pandemic landscape, if you look at what Jacquemus is doing with his kind of pop-up stores, they're so playful, they're crazy, they're quirky, they're colourful. And I think it's really eye-catching. And it's not just a sort of Instagram backdrop anymore. It's just more of a sort of holistic shift towards more playful store design.
And what about, we have to talk about it because it sort of has to come in really in every conversation now, sustainability and how much a client's concerned about that. And do you seek to address it now in every project? And if so, kind of how? I mean, I know you talked about materials being local, which is one way, right?
We absolutely have to embrace it. For us, it's the norm, but I think it's not the norm for everybody yet, and it's not the norm for every client, but I think it's becoming more and more just the norm. And I touched on SKP and Chengdu. Everything is part of the mandate. We're working with the water table, how the landscape filters the water back into the river just to the east, and everything is sourced within 500 kilometers. And yeah, it's a carbon zero construction project. But at the same time, people like our clients like Ferrari are equally magnificent in their whole, this continuous thread narrative. And they've now embraced the journey of They have an amazing brand. It is worldly recognized. They understand that the performance supercar business is changing, and they want to use their power and their status and their attraction and elevate it to brand diversification. So they brought in a new creative director, Rocco Iannone. He's creating these beautiful luxury capsule collections twice a year with runway shows. And our job was to take them on that, elevate their retail journey from being the kind of franchise licensed products into this curated experience. But at the same time, the first store we did for them in Maranello, next to their factory, everything was sourced within 100 kilometers of the store. So every, you know, from the glass to the steel to the handmade clay bricks to the fabrics to the film, the aluminium for the shop fitting elements, the artistic displays, the way they were made, it was a wonderful, they're presenting the question to me, Simon, how are we going to tackle this? And I'm saying, well, I think we can do this within 100 kilometers. Everything is made in Italy, because then that becomes part of the story of the brand codes that we build around the experience, and customers really do get it. And I think that this is, you know, it's a really important message that the staff are then trained to tell these stories to the customers that are in the store. And so that becomes another one of those onion skin layers that I talk about, that becomes, you know, it just becomes sweeter and sweeter the more that you unpeel.
Laura, are you seeing this manifesting? I know that there's a lot of talk about circular retail systems and brands making sure that they sort of own the resale journey and things like this, but it's obviously top of mind for everyone right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's becoming a lot more democratized. It's becoming a lot more accessible. But I think in the luxury space, where we're kind of seeing the narrative shift around circularity, is via this kind of idea of talking about sort of semantics around kind of heirlooms, artisanship of preservation and craftsmanship and restoration. So almost kind of turning that idea of maintenance and repair and aftercare into a luxury customer experience. So if you look at what Loewe is doing, for example, with their new store that they've opened in Japan, it's in Osaka actually, but it's called Loewe Recraft. And essentially it's a standalone Loewe store, but it's been styled. It's styled to look like a Loewe store, but it's essentially like a haberdasher. So they offer repairs undertaken by a master leather artisan, and they also sell kind of upcycled woven leather baskets. So it's like creating this kind of luxury retail experience around this idea of the circular economy and encouraging people to kind of use and wear and repair. I think, you know, sort of adding value beyond items, you know, to items beyond that sort of initial wear, and kind of creating an emotional experience around it and encouraging people to really treasure something as a keepsake is where there's a lot of innovation to be had within the sort of luxury sustainability space.
What else is on the drawing board for you right now, Simon? What's your agency working on in the retail sphere?
For SKP, we are working in multiple cities. We've got a project in Wuhan at the moment. We've got a project in Hangzhou, and there are 8 other cities that we are looking at. I mean, we are constant, you know, just because of the population metrics in China, we're fortunate that we're constantly looking at feasibility studies for our client to help them make a more informed decision. And the project in Chengdu was a great example of something that our client had, was thinking, this is not going to be possible for me to do anything. But we do a feasibility study, and we show to him, actually, we could do something really powerful and have a really strong narrative here and work with the government's mandate to achieve something. So that's SKP. We've been working with them for 11 years. We have an amazing trust, and we provide full services for them. We're also working with the Fenwick family and rebranding them. So they're the last UK family-owned department store. We've been working with them for just over a year now, and it's a beautiful... So they understand the idea that they need to do this back to the future approach as well and relook at their brand codes and how we can create some new sort of architectural design codes which give them a new house style to take them on that journey for the next 10, 15, 25 years. And it's a wonderful working with, I mean, it's a huge family, the Fenwick family. And it's great. The engagement from a lot of the family members is truly amazing.
A very quick fire final question. What store do each of you love to return to and why? Mine's Liberty, I think, probably. But Simon, what's yours?
The reason I got into retail was in the late 1988, Nigel Coates designed a store for Catherine Hamnett on Sloane Street. and he had fish tanks in the window. It was just something from, I think it was one of the first times that a retailer had hired an architect to do a store as well. So Catherine Hamlet's store was cemented, probably my retail design future. So that's probably my shoe in to my career. But I must say the Frank Lloyd retail space in Maiden Lane in San Francisco, he designed it in 1948. But the beautiful thing about it is the canvas that he's created is so stunning. And it's still there today. That's now, I've written my little pencil note here, 74 years later, they've had over 40 different brands occupy that space, all respecting the original architecture. It's been so many things, but it's so chameleon-like, yet so timeless, beautiful, and everybody wants to just preserve that canvas that he's created. And I think that's exceptional. 74 years of a store design. I mean, what a genius he was to be able to do that.
It's so interesting. I'm just thinking of one of the first places that stuck in my head as a kid was Habitat. Like when Habitat opened in, I grew up in Essex, opened in Romford, and there weren't many other stores like that in that area. And we'd go, and my mum wouldn't buy a lot there, maybe like a paper lantern. But I just remember just sitting in this sort of temple to modern design. And maybe that's why I've got into like writing about design. But these places do have a huge impact on you when they're done well. Laura, what about you? What are your kind of favourites?
Oh, well, I mean, I have places that I love to shop, but I think for me, the one that I always come back to again and again is probably Selfridges, because I just think they're always really on the money in terms of the pop-ups, the initiatives, the programming, you know, the cultural aspects, the services that they have that just always speak to the zeitgeist, what's going on at the moment, you know, whether it's the stock market at the corner shop thing that they've got at the moment around upcycling and circularity, the vintage, the pop-up with Vinteria that they've got with furniture, or the kind of secondhand clothing pop-up that they've got going on. I think they've just always got something that speaks to what the consumer wants and what's kind of happening from a sort of commercial and cultural level. So yeah, I guess it would be Selfridges.
Thank you to WGSN senior strategist Laura Saunter and the co-founder of architectural studio Sybarite, Simon Mitchell, for taking the time to speak to us today. If you're a WGSN subscriber, you'll find reports covering luxury retail on our Insight platform. And if you want to find out how to subscribe, head over to WGSN.com to discover how you can get access to our service. We're constantly publishing new content focusing on how we can design a brighter, better future for our industries. And these include food and drink, interiors, beauty, fashion, and consumer tech. You can subscribe on all major podcast platforms. And if you like what you've heard, why not leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts? We'll be back in 2 weeks for our next episode. But you can catch the CEO of WGSN, Carly Buzashi, next week on our other podcast, Lives of Tomorrow. Check it out. It's very good. And there we'll be looking at the future of death.